you're here. Fellowship sweeter, knowing you're near.
Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt His name together. It's Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. February 1st. 02-01-17. Woo!
It goes by quick. It's been going by real fast.
Now, the question is, and I talked to a person yesterday, they were working on their taxes. Might I get you to sing a little of that tax song you shared in church on Sunday?
Was that the Beatles? Oh, yeah, the Beatles. That was the week before, actually.
Was it? I don't know.
Yeah, where they'll tax your seat, they'll tax your feet, they'll tax. Although, I mean, it's historically applicable throughout all time.
Yep, yep. I know people are already wrestling through their taxes, getting everything together, and kind of already stressed out. So hopefully that's not something you have to deal with just this very day. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Well, how did I? Well, that was 2 weeks ago then. Past Sunday I was there under your preaching and teaching, and you were in Matthew, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matthew 17.
And as I was saying right before the program, see, when we used to do this at the home studio, I just had the church bulletin right there so I could kind of glance at it. And things are a little foggy. You know, you get a couple days into the week, and there's been so much going on here at the Great News Radio Center with new visitors and all these different people stopping by and juggling our wellness program, which, incidentally, we will not be meeting tomorrow. We're revamping, revitalizing. It's going to be a new and improved launch next Thursday. And we have a 4-part series, and then that will be followed by a possible 10-part series with various speakers from throughout our area dealing with wellness. Oh, I haven't even told you this yet. You're going to share on spiritual wellness. Yes, that's right.
What a time to find out.
Yes. In fact, we're going to have Jim Gunther doing on home wellness. And safety tips and things to be aware of in your house, whether it's mold or different safety things. And we thought you would cover spiritual wellness and Dr. Paul Steins. I haven't talked to him yet. Paul, if you tuned in, here's your announcement.
You're on deck.
Yeah, because he's a retired dentist. And we thought oral and tooth and the wellness of your mouth and different things you can do. And so we have a list, I think, 8 or 10 people that we're in the process of contacting. And we'll be launching that in later March into April. May. But the wellness walk and the wellness program as it exists, we wanted to take a week off so we could get all the materials together. And we actually, here at Lincoln Square, have a little map, and we want to show people, here's what it is if you're going to walk a half mile or 2 miles and how many times around and so forth. So if you're planning on coming tomorrow, please redirect that activity to something else or come to the mall, and you can certainly walk around here. But Dr. Zachariah, we're going to be brainstorming for the next few days to have everything set for next Thursday. And we are adapting the times, so there'll be 3 different times that you can sign up. And you can find out more at our website, greatnewsradio.org, but there's the 9 to 10 class, then the 12:30 to 1:30 class, so it's a half hour later than what we had in the past, only because our conversational English class kind of was overlapping. Some people were staying late, others were coming early. And then we're going to offer it from 6 to 7 p.m., so those that work can make it in the evening. So that'll be next Thursday, February 2nd. So you can find out more and register and get your name on our list so we can send you updated information and some of the special guests that we'll have in the coming weeks. Just stop by greatnewsradio.org and you'll see the wellness link, along with, if you want to get tickets to the upcoming Huntley Brown concert, it's only 17 days away, less than 3 weeks away. It's happening at the Meadowbrook Church. Huntley Brown will be joined by the singing men of GNN, but you will be blessed by his musical artistry, and he's just got a great personality and a love for the Lord, and he exudes that throughout the whole presentation. So it'll be a 7 o'clock concert, Meadowbrook Community Church, Sunday, February 19th, and you can get those tickets online at greatnewsradio.org. They're either $25 or $10 if you purchase them in advance. And if there are tickets available at the door, we expect to sell it out. There'll be $15 at the door. But find out more at greatnewsradio.org, and you'll see a link for Huntley Brown tickets, along with a link for Ivan Parker tickets that's coming to Lincoln Square here on Saturday, June 10th. So Yeah, a lot of things happening with this radio ministry. I've kind of just been amazed. Every day is a different day with new opportunities or challenges or questions to answer or how to get something to work. I think we're going to be glitch-free on this program. The phones are being turned off. The cell phones are being turned off. We got the doors locked so nobody can just walk in the middle of it. And it's all coming together. And I shared, I don't know if you heard the Tuesday broadcast, but we're really praying up for God to help us discern if, in fact, we would contemplate or consider or really pray through, Lord, might Unit 114 be a good addition? Is it too early? Or you know the timing. Mm. Certainly a luxury to have all that space, all the singing men over there. Those rehearsals just go great because the guy's got a lot of space. And we've added the furniture in here and the setup for 20 so that meet for the conversational English classes. And so suddenly the extra storage and space is
sure
borderline necessity. But again, Lord, what's the timing and how will we raise the funds to do that? So we continue to pray that up. But it's kind of fun to show it off to people. And they go, wow, look at this. And I'm like, yeah, we had all the food in here and all the people came in here. And this is how we see workshops and the settings for certain classes. And yet it's nice to have that additional space for the food and the other things. So we'll see how God leads in the days ahead. Got some interesting emails even yesterday of people saying, well, you could maybe utilize the space for this or host and hold that. And I thought, yeah, that's true. We'd like to be able to have that. It's just everything costs money, and we want to be good stewards of the timing and all. So back to Matthew 17. Mm. Give me a little reminder. I know I was intrigued and attentive and listening and wrote some notes down, but I think so much has happened in 4 days. Give me just a quick summary, and then it'll trigger my brain.
Well, I'll do that, but first I want to say that you were talking about spiritual wellness and you were talking about different aspects of wellness. And it's really interesting. It reminded me of, there's a great documentary, and it's called Logic on Fire. And what it is it's the story of Martin Lloyd-Jones. And we would consider Martin Lloyd-Jones, who ministered at Westminster Chapel for, oh my gosh, until he retired and then passed on. I think it was into the late 60s, maybe even early 70s. But he was considered to be one of the greatest evangelical preachers. I mean, he's up there with like Spurgeon and those kinds of guys. And Lloyd-Jones began his career as a medical doctor. He studied at London University, and then he was actually an assistant, an apprentice, beneath Sir Thomas Horder, who was the royal physician. And Horder had gravitated toward Lloyd-Jones because Lloyd-Jones just had an innate sense of understanding. He was very smart. He had a photographic memory. They said one story was that they were in a room with a patient, and Thomas Horder said, well, you know, this is what we think it is, but we're not sure yet because the symptoms will not manifest. And Lloyd-Jones kind of touched the man's side and said, I can tell that that's what it is. And he ended up being right. But what was incredibly impactful upon Lloyd-Jones, and he was a Christian maybe in practice, but not a Christian in terms of relationship by then, is that they were touring the hospital one day, and Sir Thomas Horder, who was well-respected and a bit cantankerous, said to Lloyd-Jones, he said, most of these people who are here, their main problem is not what it is we will diagnose. It is a greater problem. Their depression that they face is a spiritual depression, truly. Their physical ailments, many of them come from the fact of how they're dealing with things spiritually. Right. And Lloyd-Jones carried that. That became very powerful and instrumental in his own testimony of how he came to faith, because he realized, he started to see these people that he was medically treating and realizing that they had grave spiritual problems. And when the spiritual problems were addressed, some of the physical problems began to take care of themselves.
Right.
And so we can't underscore how important it is to have a spiritual wellness. You know, what is your spiritual fitness? You know, and it's kind of funny when you think about it, because the Apostle Paul talks about our faith in terms of running a race. He talks about it oftentimes in terms of like athletics, in terms of working, in terms of moving. We were talking last night or the other night, actually, about John chapter 13, where Jesus is talking about, he's washing the disciples' feet, and he's talking about, they say, no, Lord, you can't wash our feet. And the Lord says, no, I must wash your feet. Yeah. And he even says, you do not need a bath, but I will continue to need to wash your feet. And it made me think about, You know, why does Jesus say that? Now, when he says that they don't need a bath, he's saying, I have done a once and for all act of cleansing you. That's what happens when you come to me through faith. But then he says, I'm going to have to continue to wash your feet. And why is that? When we look through the Bible, oftentimes the Bible talks about our faith in terms of walking. Mm-hmm. Ephesians says that God has created good works that we might walk in them. But then also the Bible talks about the fact that when we are struggling with our sin, we stumble. Again, something that happens with our feet. And so Jesus, I think when he's with the disciples, he says, look, there's the spiritual movement that happens, and I'm going to have to keep cleaning your feet because your feet are going to get dirty because they're actively walking out your faith and actively stumbling in sin. So I'm going to have to keep doing work there, but the rest of you is clean. And so I think we can't underscore our physical. I think for many of us, we address our spirit, our physical well-being, but we can't underscore our spiritual well-being. You know, what it is that we have to do to work on our heart, to fill up our heart. You know, sometimes I think that, you know, the muscle, we're working our spiritual muscle when we're being convicted. I mean, that's the flexing of our spiritual muscle. I think when I work out, you know, sometimes, which isn't that often, is that, you know, things get sore. Mm-hmm. Well, I get sore when I get convicted about something. Yeah. I get a sore feeling because I don't like it. But yet, like Hebrews 12 says, it yields a good result, that it allows my knees to straighten back up and for me to lift my drooping arms. It allows me to worship the Lord again. So I think we can't underscore that.
Well, I think now that if you're not available in mid-March or April for this wellness workshop, I'm just going to play this program and say, I'll have a stand-in for you. Here's Jason's voice. He couldn't be here tonight, but here's a little devotional thought on wellness and spiritually being fit day to day.
But here's the other thing. So here's where I'm going. Is you can't do the things that it takes for you to be spiritually well unless you take care of the other things.
Right.
You have to take care of your eyes so you can read. You have to take care of your so you can breathe while you're. I mean, all the rest of there is a physical part of what it takes to flex those spiritual muscles.
Well, and proper rest. That's right. One of the things I know many times I've struggled with. You work really hard, you play hard on Saturday night. And so you get to church and you're tired or you're not attentive because you didn't take care of yourself. And I had to be really intentional on Saturday to minimize maybe all the different activities.
Were you falling asleep in church?
Yeah, not this week. No. You don't allow people to fall asleep. You're up there ready to preach and
deliver
a message.
Well, I figure if I can't, you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, that's right.
And if I fall asleep, it's really
it's awkward.
Awkward. Yeah, it definitely is. But I think you can't underscore it. I mean, I think we got to look at what is our spiritual health. And I think that in the same way, too, we've probably got to do some spiritual fitness tests. I think that sometimes that's why it's important to be in Bible studies and places where there's discussion happening so that we can be reminded that we're not as fit as we think we are and then be challenged and prodded on by brothers and sisters to become more fit.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I love going. You know, sometimes people ask me, they'll say, well, I mean, did you really enjoy going to that Bible study? Because, I mean, you know so much. I mean, is that really? And I go, I have never been somewhere, rarely, where I don't learn something,
right,
where I don't walk away and go, wow, or walk away and be convicted of something that seems so simple that I've forgotten it.
Or like you have mentioned, I mean, you know the theology, the background, you've studied it, you've read many books on it, and then a simple new believer will share an insight or a concept that you'll say, wow, this is what my children get too.
Right.
They just love God. They just say, I don't know, God, I just trust you. And it's that simple where we have a whole doctrine on how God answers that prayer or something.
Well, and sometimes, too, it's helpful to be somewhere where something is said the wrong way to remind you of the importance of saying something the right way.
Yeah.
You know, because it's different. You know, if I'm preaching, I'm up there, and so I'm kind of disconnected from what's happening. But when I sit in a crowd and I hear somebody say something and I go, oh, that's not quite right. You know, first of all, you have to fight the urge to be the critic. But the second part is that you have to go, you know what? It's so important that we make sure we know what we're saying so we say the right things. Right. And so there's always, no matter if it's good or, I tell people this all the time, no matter if it's good or it's bad, you're going to learn something.
Right.
You're either going to learn how not to do it or you're going to learn how to do it or you're going to learn something about it if it's being done well. So I think it's important. I think that too often we say, well, I don't want to do that because that's no good or that's not good enough. Or that's. You're always going to learn something somewhere. And that comes from your, again, your spiritual health, your dependence upon God, in saying, you know what? God will teach me something. Every single place. And if you feel like, well, you know what? It just feels like God's not teaching me anything. I always tell people, maybe you're not making yourself available for God to teach you something. Mm-hmm. You know, part of that spiritual wellness is being an active participant, showing up with your shoes on. You know, I used to have a buddy I ran with, and he used to say that. He used to say, did you show up with your shoes on? And I'd say, I got them on. And then we'd start running. And you know, sometimes you show up your shoes, and then we get done with the run, and it would be just horrible. And he would say, you didn't bring your shoes today, did you? Then, you know, I think it's the same way. I got to show up with my Bible open, ready to go. And you know what? When I show up with my Bible open and trusting God and understanding that He is who He says He is, He's always going to show me something. No matter where you go, no matter what you read in the Bible, He's going to teach you something. Because the Bible is not just about Him. The Bible is about Him relating to you and who He is to you. And also, you know, how He worked in the lives of people, which in many ways we might say, well, that feels really disconnected because, you know, I'm not this or I'm not that. And in reality, you know, I'm not a tax collector. And in reality, God says, no, you're not. But you know what? Your heart is kind of like one sometimes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I think that we've just got to be real careful and say, you know what? Okay, well, what's the Lord going to teach me here? Be willing. Show up with your shoes on, your Bible open.
Hey, that shoes on. Have you used that illustration of the two guys and there's a bear that shows up and they're running from the bear? And then the one guy stops and sits down, and the bear's, you know, getting closer and closer on the guys. And the one guy looks at the other guy and says, there's no way we're going to be able to outrun the bear. What are you doing sitting down? And he's going, I'm putting on my sneakers because I know I can outrun you.
I thought it was going to be the joke where the guy prays that the bear is a Christian.
Oh, yeah.
And then the bear goes, thank you, Lord, for this meal I'm about to
eat.
That's
a good one, too. a little levity in the morning.
A little levity in the morning. Yeah, so, you know, last weekend I preached on Matthew 17. And really, Matthew 17 is kind of, for where I think I ended up for some people, they felt like it was odd where I began because the scripture doesn't seem to lend itself to what it was I kind of ended up with. But the Matthew 17, beginning in verse 24, just talks about how the tax collector comes to Peter and he says, you know, does your teacher, does he pay the 2 drachma tax? And when he says, does he pay that tax, what he's talking about is he's saying, does he pay the temple tax, which would always be collected in the month of March. So they would send tax. So important was this tax, by the way, this temple tax, that they would send tax collectors in Palestine and outside of Palestine that would go to all the villages and collect this temple tax in the month of March. And if you missed March, then they would collect it from you when you came to the temple during Passover. And so this tax collector comes and he says to Peter, does your teacher pay the tax? And Peter immediately says yes. And a lot of people think that maybe Peter is being zealous for his master. Peter is saying, or maybe Peter has seen Jesus pay his tax before, though the Bible never talks about that. And we know Jesus kept the Mosaic law, so maybe because it was part of in the Old Testament that maybe, you know, that he was being obedient to that part of it. But I think what for Peter is probably important and what's important for us is that Jesus always keeps his commitments. That when Jesus knows something needs to be done, Jesus does it. Jesus handles it. Jesus is not passive aggressive like we tend to be. He doesn't want to like put issues. I mean, is that you? Am I talking to you today? I mean, do you oftentimes if something comes up and you're like, gosh, if I can just, you know, can I just deal with that tomorrow, not today? And Jesus would say, no, not tomorrow, today. We're going to do it right now. And that's actually shown in the text because after Peter says yes, it says he came into the house and Jesus spoke to him first. You know, it's interesting because Peter just had this altercation, this moment with the tax collector. So you think Peter would come right into the house and say, hey, Jesus, we got something we need to talk about because we need to figure this out. We don't want to be in trouble here. We don't want to be looking as though for some reason we don't support the temple. By the way, the temple tax was a sign of Jewish loyalty. It was a sign that you were invested in the temple. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Peter does not want to be seen as that. But when Peter comes in the house, before Peter can even say anything, Jesus addresses it first because he's not passive-aggressive. And Jesus says this, what do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take toll or tax, from their sons or from others? What Jesus is saying is he's saying, look, when the kings tax, do they tax their own sons and their sons' families? Or do the taxes come from the other people in the kingdom? Peter says right away, he says, well, from the others, not from the son. And Jesus' illustration is pretty clear. Jesus is saying, the temple is my Father's house. Remember in the early chapters of Luke where little boy Jesus, he goes missing and they find him 3 days later and he's in the court with the chief priest, or he's in the court with the rabbis and the teachers, and it says, and they were asking and answering questions. And his parents are like, Jesus, where have you been? And Jesus says, didn't you know I'd be in my dad's house? I'd be in my Father's house. So the temple is his dad's house. The temple is God's house. The king of the universe, his house was the temple. And Jesus in this illustration is saying, and I'm his son, so I'm exempt from the tax. Now, many of us right there, we'd say, well, I'm exempt. I don't have to pay it. I'm not going to pay it. But Jesus says something really interesting. It's something that really challenged me, Mark, as I was reading this and studying it. Jesus says, but, however, not to give offense. So Jesus says, I'm the king's son. I don't have to pay this tax. But I don't want to offend anybody. Because, see, the tax collector then would have to go back to the people who are above him and say, well, this guy Jesus, he doesn't want to pay the tax. And maybe in the midst of all that, somehow that tax collector may sin. Maybe somebody may hear that Jesus doesn't pay the tax and question his loyalty to the temple or question his loyalty to the worship of God. All those things may happen somehow, some way. And Jesus says, this amount of tax we got to pay, it's minuscule in terms of what can be gained. Sometimes I think as Christians, the battles that we fight are minuscule in terms of the gains that we could have. You know, one of the great marks of Christian maturity is when we lay aside our rights. When we say, you know what, I could do this, but so not to offend, I'm going to set that down because I need to love you. See, what Jesus is saying here is he's saying, look, as a son, I have a right not to pay the tax, but as a son of God, I don't have the right not to love. Not even my enemies. I love my enemies. That's what Jesus tells you to do. It's absolutely challenging. And then Jesus says to this, he says, go to the sea, says this to Peter. Cast a hook and take the first fish that comes up. And when you open its mouth, you're going to find a shekel. A shekel would be enough to pay the temple tax for two people, for Peter and for Jesus. And it's a marvelous moment, isn't it? Because it's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. I mean, many of us, if we caught a fish and there was money inside the fish's mouth, we'd say, oh my gosh, it's a miracle. And it made me ask the question, what's a miracle? I mean, is a miracle for you kind of that moment where, boom, something happens, and it's like almost magic? Sometimes I think we relegate miracle to magic. Like, boom, it just happened. Or is a miracle actually something I think a whole lot more beautiful? And that is a long line, a long chain of seemingly ordinary things that when orchestrated and put together by God yield something that looks absolutely miraculous. That's like somebody finds some ore in the ground and they dig it up and they give it to somebody else and they put it on a cart and that person takes it to somebody else who fashions it into coins. And that person takes the coins out and begins to disseminate it around the town or the village or wherever. And somebody gets paid that coin to for a day's labor, a day's work. And then he buys some stuff with that coin. And then it goes from here to there to here to there. And maybe before that coin gets dropped into the Sea of Galilee, it changes 100 different hands. And then at the right moment, a moment appointed by God, that coin is dropped into the water. And one of the various species of tilapia kind of swims by and says, oh, a coin. And he takes it into his mouth. And it's a totally different tilapia than all the other ones because he doesn't swallow the coin. Instead, he keeps it in his mouth, waiting for the right time, the exact moment when he's going to bite on that hook. Peter's going to pull it in. And there's going to be the money for the tax. A bunch of absolutely ordinary moments when put together yield something incredibly miraculous. And I think I told folks on Sunday morning, that's what I think the church is like. Mm-hmm. A bunch of ordinary looking people who, when put together, do something absolutely miraculous. Something that nobody would have dreamed of, but God knew. And for me, I don't know about you, Mark, but that is so encouraging. That in kind of the mundane things of the day, God is orchestrating and moving me to do something that I might not know, might not understand. None of those people prior to the Peter pulling that fish up knew that they were any part of God's miracle. And yet they were. And so I think that should encourage us in the things that we do.
And that would encourage us to turn to Matthew chapter 17 today. That's the assignment. Listen and read and hear what God has to speak to you about this miraculous work and what he desires to do through your ordinary activities today. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffo with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.